that energy is a lot different than if we're almost hyperventilating because we realize, holy shnikes, things got way out of control here.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello and welcome to episode 38 of the Alzheimer's Podcast. I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. As always, thank you for joining me for another podcast, for my goal is always to empower you to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. In this episode of Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa, Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, and I continue our conversation on how to know when it's time to intervene or get professional help. This is the third episode in this six-part series. We kicked off the series with episode 36 with an overview of five main areas to look at, and in episode 37, we discussed the first area, diminished safety awareness. Now, in this episode, we're going to discuss how to know when changes that we observe in the individual's home environment require intervention. I am so pleased to have Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, as a regular guest here on the Alzheimer's Podcast. She provides a level of knowledge, empathy, and compassion that's unrivaled and that I believe you will find very helpful and refreshing. She is a certified dementia practitioner, certified dementia care unit manager, and cognitive stimulation instructor. She has run award-winning memory care communities in assisted living and skilled nursing levels of care. Using her 16 years of experience in working with over 1,100 people living with dementia and their families, she's developed a system that helps families move from crisis management to confidence. Well, hello, Christy. It's great to have you back on the Alzheimer's Podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
You're very welcome. So, Christy, before we start discussing changes in the home environment that might be clues that intervention is needed, can you start with a quick recap for our listeners of why you created this list of signs and the accompanying articles?
Yeah. So, years ago, I noticed that people kept missing these signs and would tell me later after I was working with them, or even years ago when I was a memory care director and they had moved their loved one into my memory care neighborhood, people kind of always said the same thing. And it was this theme around, well, there were all of these signs, but they didn't know that they were signs that they needed to intervene. It was only in retrospect. And some of them seem really obvious to a professional, or they seem really obvious to anyone in retrospect, but people just don't know what they don't know. So I thought, well, I think it would be a great idea to put a list together that shows these common things that people are kind of not paying attention to because they just don't know that it's, they think it's some other problem. They don't know that it's related to dementia and that it's time to intervene if these things start happening. And then based on that and having more conversations with people, I thought, well, I could write a little bit more about this and give people some more information. So that's how it came to be.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I remember when I was new to learning about the disease, everything's a new learning experience, right?
And then, right.
And we as professionals, it's easy to take for granted that everybody already knows this, but that's not the way things work. So,
yeah, it's funny you say that because every time I go to write a blog post or I'm getting ready for a speech or something, I always think, oh, nobody's going to want to hear that or nobody's going to want to read that. People already know this. And then one time my mom said something to me, which was just right on the money, as many things she says are. She said, well, for you, but, you know, for a neighbor down the street that's going through this the first time, I was like, oh, yeah, because that's the sad truth is every what is it, 67 seconds now? I think it's less than that. Somebody gets the diagnosis. So people are going through it for the first time every single day.
And that's true. It's something like 67 seconds in just the United States. And I always like to,
right.
I always like to mention to people that it's every 3 seconds worldwide, or 27,000 new diagnoses every day.
Mm. Yeah, here's a sad point of comparison. 10 years ago, and I remember this because I was using it in marketing materials that I was creating 10 years ago when I was a memory care director, it was every 72 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're definitely
going the wrong way.
Exactly. So, well, Christy, so today again, we're going to talk about signs in the home environment. And the first item on the list that you have are scams, and you use an example. And you put a stat in there of, I believe it was $37 billion. Older adults are scammed out of $36 billion every year in just the United States. That's quite a large number. I was shocked.
Isn't that staggering?
I was shocked. And yeah. And that's not necessarily people with dementia, who obviously are going to be more susceptible.
Right.
And so the first item on the list, you put an example of when someone suddenly starts writing checks for large amounts to unknown people, or you witness unusual banking practices. That's not so obvious necessarily to somebody that's, unless they've already intervened in some degree with the financial information, like a daughter or a son maybe hasn't. And so I'm wondering, what suggestions would you have to them to help them look out for their parents being scammed or making poor financial decisions, we'll call it?
That is a great question. There are a few different ways, and part of it I go into more in the rest of the article. Start looking for the evidence, right? So, and it's not like you really need to go on a search. You might just literally stumble across it. Are there a bunch of things that didn't used to be there? You know, if your parent has never shopped on Amazon or rarely shopped on Amazon, and all of a sudden the UPS truck is showing up multiple times a week, or you see a lot of Amazon boxes, or, you know, it doesn't have to be from Amazon. It could be from anywhere. In my family, my grandma got very hooked into ordering collectible Franklin Mint plates. And they say collectible, and it's the Franklin Mint and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Are they worth, you know, 50 cents at a yard sale? I have no idea. But she had literally a room full of stuff that was being delivered by UPS, this bedroom, the spare room, that we could barely get the door open by the time it was all said and done, because there was so much stuff in there that had never even been removed from the package.
Oh, wow.
This was going on. My grandpa didn't say anything. So sometimes you just kind of, you know, start looking at the big picture, talk to other people in your family, what else is going on? You know, compare notes. So that was one thing. And she dramatically increased her magazine subscriptions because she thought that the contest people were watching her. That's what she called them, the contest people. She started getting subscriptions to, Fit Pregnancy.
Oh my.
Right? Nobody in the family was pregnant. You know, so look for unusual types of things like that too. Like what is going on here, because something just doesn't seem right. So that's one thing. Another thing is, are there people that you haven't seen before kind of hanging around that you've never heard anything about, right? So now when I struck out on my own, I had a business partner, and we did care management, meaning that often we were caring for people who are living with dementia. And by caring for, I don't mean day to day, like they lived in their, you know, community, but or in their own home. But we did things like arrange their doctor's appointments and, you know, made sure they had groceries and would accompany them to the doctor, make sure everything in their living environment was okay. They had what they needed, that type of stuff. And so in one sense, it was like being, you know, surrogate kids, right? Most of our clients didn't have any family around, or they didn't have any children at all, but some did. And so, you know, as a proactive measure for us as professionals, like obviously if somebody had a diagnosis of dementia, we could never enter into a service agreement with them because that would be unethical. So it needed to be somebody who could do that on their behalf. But we reached out to the rest of the family too. Like, oh, okay, you don't have any kids. All right, who else in your family is involved? Oh, you have a niece who lives three states away. Great, can I get her contact information? Because we felt it was important, like, we need to let this person know that just because she lives three states away and is only able to visit twice a year doesn't mean that she doesn't have an interest. And she needs to know, hey, there are professionals involved. This is why, this is what's going on. And a professional will do that, will be proactive in making an introduction, explaining the situation, and making sure that all of your questions are answered. If it's somebody shady, on the other hand, they're going to be kind of secretive and acting like you as a family member don't really have a vested interest and telling you not to worry about X, Y, and Z. It's just going to feel weird. Mm. And it's going to look weird too. So that's another thing, like who's hanging around and what's going on. And then I do encourage people to go ahead and get on a bank account and, you know, help people with their mail, their bills, their financial transactions. Not everybody needs that help, but most people do at a certain point, whether they have a cognitive impairment or not, because a lot of times investments can kind of get away from people. They forget that they maybe were using 10 different brokerage accounts or whatever the case may be. There are lots of different nuances, but just kind of be there and make sure that people know that you can help, and make trips to the bank with your person, right, too, so that the people in the bank get familiar with who you are.
Do you find that people who are possibly, you know, spending like this or making questionable decisions with their finances are using checkbooks or credit cards, or is it a mix, or does it not matter? Because, you know, it might be easier for a daughter to pick up dad's checkbook and take a quick peek, whereas finding bank statements and stuff might be buried away somewhere else.
That's a good question, because what I have found is that often people don't want to intervene, right? Because we still want our person to like us, which is totally normal and natural. But we're kind of missing the obvious, which is when there is a stack of mail sitting there and it has brokerage account statements and bank statements, and they're just kind of sitting there.
Right.
Your person's not paying attention to that. Right? There should not be a giant stack of mail that hasn't been gone through. So that's a clue that something's amiss. Right. Something needs a little further attention. Looking at a checkbook register is another good way to go about it. And it certainly, if you see something, you need to take immediate action. In my own family, my grandma, because of what she thought was happening, and she thought the contest people were watching her, you know, she burned through $30,000 before my grandpa got a hold on it.
Oh, wow.
And
oh, my.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. And my grandparents were so lucky and so blessed that they could absorb a $30,000 hit. Many people can't.
Right.
You know, for a lot of seniors out there, that's more than their annual income. So that really could have gotten ugly. And this was long enough ago that, thank God, she'd never used a computer.
Right.
You know, if this had started happening now, she would be a person who would have familiarity with using the internet and Amazon, for example. And it's not that I don't love Amazon, but they make it super easy, right? Where you can purchase with one-click shopping.
Yes. Too easy.
Too easy. So just look at those things. You got to pay attention.
Right. And I'm visualizing that stack of junk mail, which is obviously a sign also. And it's, I believe it's under one of your other signs here in the list. But that, you know, when we get mail, so much of it, even from reputable businesses, looks like it's official and legitimate. And you open it up and it's just them trying to sell you another credit card or to sell you this. And you're just like, oh my gosh. So it's really hard just to discern what's of importance and what's not. So I can see how that could be a good opportunity for the care partner to say to their loved one, you know, hey, maybe we can sort the mail together and use that as an opportunity to open conversation about the finances or look at statements together.
Yes, especially I'm thinking of one. Oh, this just infuriated me. A certain major U.S. political party sent out past due statements. That's what they were stamped with. They said they were past due statements to people and told them that their membership fee was past due, and it looked like a past due bill, and it was, I think it was $35 or something like that. What they were soliciting was a contribution. There was no past due, but it targeted elderly people. And this happened in this last election cycle.
Yeah, that should be criminal.
I completely agree. And we have another election cycle coming up very soon. So something like that can happen. I had a client who had a beautiful, long seated 12 people oak dining table. It was literally covered with mail that was probably, you know, at least 6 inches high across that whole table. That's a lot of mail. It was junk mail. It was almost exclusively junk mail. And because of how it works, you know, you get on one mailing list, you end up on many.
Right.
And a lot of older adults are good-hearted people who really appreciate, you know, veterans organizations.
Sure.
Or the SPCA, or, you know, animal organizations, or all these different types of things. And it, so it doesn't have anything to do with, even though I was just mentioning politics, it doesn't have anything to do with ideology. It's just one list. And pretty soon, you know, there's every organization under the sun asking for money, and people can get a little bit overwhelmed and sometimes mixed up about what's legit, what's not legit. And let's be clear, even if all of the mail was from, let's say, PBS and the Sierra Club and the SPCA and, you know, American Veterans and just worthy organizations, most people, particularly older adults, do not have unlimited income to donate to every cause that needs it. And it's an odd thing that happens with older adults where they can really start to feel guilty. Like, they're kind of in this life review process, mm-hmm. and thinking, well, maybe I haven't done enough. Maybe I haven't made a big enough impact. And I have literally seen people give to the point where it does hurt because suddenly they don't have enough money for groceries or for their prescriptions.
Yeah,
and we've all heard the cat food horror stories. So,
yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, it's good to pay attention to the environment.
So what I would recommend in that case is for the care partner to start canceling some things. There's a lot of the junk mail can be canceled. I've personally canceled my junk mail. My mailman told me that I'm the only one out of 2,500 people that's canceled my junk mail, which was really, for me as a tree hugger, I was not happy with.
Right. I bet your mail carrier loves you, though.
Yeah. Well, it confuses them because I'm the only one, right?
Oh, right.
And they had to put a little sticker on my mail box from the backside. But, and, you know, a lot of the credit card offers, what I've done is I've just wrote cancel across the application and put it back in the postage paid envelope they provide. And that seems to be pretty effective for the most part.
That's curative, huh?
So, there's, you know, I would start with to helping reduce that junk mail and stuff so that you could, it's easier for you to sort through and pay attention to. So, Christy, another item when we're kind of talking about a little bit is the home cleanliness, and that's a lot more obvious. Obviously, you walk into that mm-hmm. than seeing someone's finances, unless there's a bunch of boxes from Amazon laying around. But in the home, you walk in, you can tell if this person's been real clean for years that now something's amiss, right?
And absolutely.
And you said in your article that it's easier to intervene when it's no big deal.
It is. It's here's an equivalency. Is it easier to manage a cold or pneumonia?
Right.
Right? A cold every time. And so it's the same thing this way. When it's just no great shakes and we're able to be a cool kitten about it when we're intervening because it's no great shakes, that energy is a lot different than if we're almost hyperventilating because we realize, holy shnikes, things got way out of control here. And then, you know, we're bringing that energy of, oh my God, I got to do something. And that's very easy. That's very easy then for people to say, no, I brought you into this world. I can take you out. I don't need your help. If I need help, I'll let you know. And how long since you've lived at home? And you just end up being this target of a blast inferno coming your way. So, go ahead and intervene when it's not a big deal.
Right. And one of the examples you used, I loved, was a laundry example where you said, just throw in one of your shirts with 10 of theirs.
Yeah. That's really, really easy. And same thing if you, and here's the big difference, right? Because a lot of times we say, oh, well, I would, cook for him. I'd happily cook for dad. But every time I ask him, he says, no, I'm fine. Or I would be happy to take grandma to the grocery store and her appointments. But every time I ask her, she says, no. Why are you asking? This is one of those hard things for us as care partners, especially for younger care partners like us in our 40s. It's real life. It's happening. It's a transition. We are transitioning generationally, and we need to step up. We don't need to be asking for permission and potentially turning it into a situation where somebody feels like it's embarrassing or humiliating. Not because we're doing something wrong, but because for a lot of older adults, particularly people in their, they're in their 90s now, or late 80s, we're talking about a generation that saved civilization as we know it. Really, do you think they're going to ask for help? Hell no, they're not. They're going to say, I'm fine, I got this. So stop asking and start doing. I just went through this with a client, a week ago, where she said, the problem is my mother-in-law, she needs help, and she always says no, and da-da-da-da-da. We went through this whole thing, and I said, have you tried just calling her and saying, I'll see you in 45 minutes, just want to make sure you were home, and then going over? Well, I hadn't thought of that. And so she started taking that approach. It's working like a charm, no problem. And she was very clever when she knew that her mother-in-law needed help with cleaning the kitchen floor. And her mother-in-law said, oh, no, I don't want to put you out. And she said, well, I remember you telling me about this certain technique that you used, and I just don't know that I've mastered it. And I think my floors could use it. So can I test a spot on your kitchen floor? You can kind of give me some direction and let me know, where I might be messing it up. She agreed to that. So before you know it, we'll look at that. The whole floor was done, because it would be weird to have one spot that was really nice and shiny, but the rest of it wasn't. And no hard feelings. Everything was okay. So she allowed her mother-in-law to save face, still got it done. And we can use that technique all day long. Hey, I made extra chicken and dumplings, beef stew, whatever it is. I made too much. I don't know what I was thinking. I thought I'd bring some over for you.
You're mentioning food now, and that's something that I always see on lists that is a sign that either the spoiling food or there's no food. I guess that's a pretty common occurrence as well.
It is. One of the reasons that people tend to do well when they move into assisted living, like all of a sudden it's like, well, maybe they really didn't need to move into assisted living because now they've got all this energy. You know why? Because they don't have to cook anymore. They don't have to clean anymore. And those things take more energy than we think about. Again, when we're in our 40s and at the apex of our life, we're not sweating the energy that it takes to mop a floor, vacuum the house, do 5 loads of laundry, buy groceries for the week, and cook. But when I say it all together, it starts to sound like, well, maybe there's something to that. That's a lot. For somebody who is trying to cook for one person or just expending the energy in doing all of those tasks, it can feel really overwhelming. So with some support, which it doesn't have to be at assisted living. If somebody's living independently and they're safe to do that, just the added support of having meals in microwavable dishes, one portion size, where they can just take it out of the refrigerator, stick it in the microwave and eat it, that gives them a lot of energy to use for other things.
I wish
and
I had that.
We take it for granted.
I had to tell you, when my wife...
I think it's called Blue Apron, Mike.
Yeah, when my wife's not around, I don't cook. I don't eat nearly the same as... It probably ends up being a bowl of cereal. And I can only imagine how our, people with dementia, how that progression affects them. You used the word sweat, which made me think of temperature changes in the home. That's also another indicator that something might not be right, I believe.
Yes. You know, a lot of times people, especially people who grew up during the Depression, will not use their air conditioners when it's too hot outside. They will not use their heaters when it's too cold. And I don't care how well insulated a home is, you know, when it is 12 degrees outside, the heater needs to be running inside. When it is 100 degrees outside, the air conditioner needs to be running inside. And that is a big, big indicator that there's a problem. People, older adults, their internal thermostat is going wonky doodle. When you put dementia on top of it, that's just an accelerated wonky doodle. And those are scientific terms, in case anybody's wondering. So I used to wonder, you know, before I got into this line of work, I'd always wonder, because every summer you see some story about somebody who, you know, there was a heat wave in Chicago. It always seemed like a heat wave in Chicago and, you know, seven elderly people died. I'm like, why? What? I don't understand. I mean, I don't like heat. It's miserable, but why? And that's why it's that internal thermostat. So people don't perceive that they're too hot. That's a problem, right? Because they're getting overheated whether they feel it or not. Their organs are still responding as though they're becoming overheated. Their body is responding as though they're becoming overheated, even though they're not perceiving that it's a problem. So I have literally seen people go out into 100 degree weather wearing double knit polyester and a sweater and saying, honey, can you bring me a blanket?
Oh my.
No, you're going to cook. Let's go back inside. So it's better to have somebody in a 78 degree home who is cranky because they're feeling too cold, fine, then they can put on a sweater. That's okay. But so this is why. And then the other thing is people will voluntarily decrease their fluid consumption because they can't get to the bathroom in time.
Okay.
And especially if they're going to be around family, people can be very self-conscious about that. And I think if I drink as much water as I need, then, you know, I'm going to have a lot of accidents and that'll just be terrible. Well, what's more terrible is dehydration, right? People end up in the hospital for that. And just to give you an idea, unless you're one of those people who meticulously tracks how much water you consume in a day, you could probably walk into any hospital right now as a healthy person and be admitted for dehydration. That's how common it is. That's how easy it is to happen. Now imagine if you were severely limiting yourself because you didn't want to be a burden to people around you to help you to the bathroom.
That's very interesting. I hadn't really thought of it to that degree, and I can definitely see how that can be an issue. So Christy, or for our listeners, if you're not aware, I will put links on the show notes to Christy's article and the list that she's referring to. But as we wrap up today's episode, Christy, is there another major item or some items that you think that our listeners should look for when they're looking for changes in the home environment?
Well, I would say just definitely go to that article, because that particular one has a pop-up where when you go there, it pops up and gives you where you can sign up to get what's called the Lawton scale. And it's a free download, and it will help you determine if your person is still safely independent at home or not.
Oh, wow.
So use that tool.
I'm not familiar with that. I'm going to have to check that out myself, and I hope our listeners do as well. So, yeah, it's a great series of articles, and Christy, I look forward to continuing our conversations on this topic over the next couple of episodes.
Me too.
So I want to just thank you for joining us today, and thank you to our listeners.
Thank you, everyone.
This concludes our conversation with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, right here on The Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. If you've missed the first two episodes of this six-part series, be sure to check out episodes 36 and 37. And over the next three episodes, Christy and I will discuss the remaining three areas, which include behavioral, physical, and cognitive changes. Be sure to visit the show notes at togetherinthis.com/episode 38 for any mentioned resources and for a link to Christy's website. You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.